Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Former Chiefs GM John Dorsey was just on Good Morning Football. Hey, Good Morning Football. And he was asked about why he wears a sweatshirt instead of, most GMs wear a suit and tie or something, collar shirt or whatever. He said it makes life a lot simpler.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Does it?
I don't know.
Sure. Why not?
If you're in your makeshift basement, probably does.
I got nothing. I got nothing against running suits and whatever else. Get in where you fit in. You don't have to wear a suit to look good. Doris just says he makes life simpler. And there's nothing wrong with that. Damn it. Rustin Dodd is now joining us. Hello, Rustin. How are you?
I'm doing well, Stephen. Get in where you fit in is a great life motto.
That's exactly right. Rustin Dodd, we played your clip of you asking Ned Yost about Alex Gordon. In fact, I want to play it again for people that didn't hear it because it took place late last night as the Royals went 13 innings to defeat the Boston Red Sox 7-6. And for those that missed it, Alex Gordon hit a big solo home run off Craig Kimbrel to tie the game in the ninth inning. And here's what you asked Ned Yost after the game about Gordon.
Yeah, when Alex has a moment like that, does he give you a hey, it's still in there? Is it still?
No, I don't need that to verify that it's still in there. I think it's still in there. We've been over it a lot.
Yeah.
I don't need to see Alex at a home run for me to think that it's still in there.
97 mile an hour fastball.
It's still in there.
Okay, so
Steven, what you guys don't see in that clip is that 3 or 4 second pause where Ned and I are staring at each other and I'm holding my palms in the air like, okay.
Right. I mean, because look, I was critical on that earlier because I mean it's the same old stick. You know, we get it. You know, used to smart off to Nate and just whatever else and no questions good and blah blah blah. But I mean, come on. Of course, we need to see something to suggest that it's still in there because it hasn't been there in over 2 years. We need some type of evidence of it, not just blind faith. Because I get it. Sometimes blind faith will work, and it has worked with Ned Yost in trusting his players and believing in his players. But just because you want Alex Gordon to be the same player that he used to be, that doesn't mean it's true. And like I said, we're not talking about a guy that I get that reaction of a guy who's been slumping for a month. He's been slumping for well over 2 years. And so I thought it was a fine question to ask. I need to see it. I think any Royals fan needs to see evidence that it's still in there because it hasn't been there. I mean, right? That's why you asked the question.
Yeah. I mean, I was most impressed by Craig Kimbrel. I mean, it wasn't like he was hitting some random reliever from a guy you've never heard of who hung a breaking ball and he hit it out. He caught up to a 97-mile-an-hour fastball and hit a game time home run in the ninth inning. You know, I did ask Alex about it later about he was sitting on a fastball and obviously he knows Kimbrel's stuff and he wasn't going to get beat with that. But even saying that, I mean, even if you're cheating on a fastball, to be able to do that I think it's impressive and it suggests, hey, he's still got some bit of bat speed to be able to do that and catch up with a 97 and, it suggests something is still in there, whether it's the Alex Gordon of old or not. It is an encouraging sign.
Well, I disagree, Russ, and it's been there the whole time. We didn't need to see any of that.
Do you, so like Mike Boddicker says that Alex Gordon does look different. And he does see things. Does he look any different to you at the plate?
I guess I'm probably not qualified in the amount of sample size that I've watched him hit in spring training and in April, to just because he was on the DL for 13 games. And it's hard for me to say either way without it, with any sort of confidence. I've seen him roll over a lot of pitches and hit a lot of ground balls to the right side. And, that can mean his timing's off. That can mean a lot of things. But that's what we've seen a lot of him the last 2 years as well. To me, looking back at the numbers last season, you know, the batting average was what it was. I mean, I think it was 207, and obviously that's unplayable, really, or close to it. But the slugging percentage and the lack of power that he hit for last year was what the most alarming thing to me was, because, you know, guys slump and they struggle to get base hits, but, you know, a guy with the physical tools of Alex, you just expect that he's going to be able to run into some bad pitches and, you know, hit, you know, 10 to 15 home runs, especially the way home runs are flying out of parks these days. And I think he finished with 9 last year, and it was, you know, a lot of those came later in the season. So, yeah, maybe there is something there, and maybe he's found a little something. But until I see, like, a consistent extra base hits and a few more home runs, I'm just going to naturally be a little bit more skeptical, I think.
No, I'm with you. He needs to do it for a long period of time to erase what's taken place over the past couple of years before we are to legitimately believe that he's back or he's anything close. And he doesn't need to be what he was at his peak. He just needs to be a productive hitter in Major League Baseball, and he hasn't been that for the past couple of years. But you wrote about the other the really cool thing about the story, not just him hitting a game-tying home run that reminded us of the home run he hit off of Familia in the 2015 World Series, but for those who don't know, his father passed away in February. This is the dad's road trip for the Royals, and the dad's hit batting practice before the game, and so in his father's place, he had his older brother there, and his older brother hit a home run in spring training and was having some fun with Alex Gordon because Alex had not hit a home run yet. But I thought that was a cool addition to the story that maybe a lot of people didn't know about it.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Gordon has three brothers. I think people, especially people from Nebraska, understand that. He's the third or the second of four. His older brother Eric is on the trip, and there's a couple of older brothers that are on this trip as well, or just brothers in general. But yeah, he told me he hit two balls over the Green Monster. He's a right-handed hitter, not a left-hander, over the Green Monster during batting practice. He's a former college player, obviously, and he's a Gordon, so he's fairly big. but he also hit one out of Fenway. Like, he cleared the monster seats and, you know, everything else is out there in left field. So, like, after he did that, he gently went up to Alex and pointed out that he'd yet to hit a home run in 2018, and his brother, who is not a professional baseball player, is hitting balls out of Fenway Park. So yeah, they were together after the game. It's one of the very cool things about the dad's road trip, that you see not only are they here and they're at the games, but, you know, like, they're in the clubhouses, they're in the dugout before the game, they're in a lot of places where the players are, and they're just like, their son has just played, or their brother in this case has just played a Major League Baseball game, and they're just sitting together, you know, at their locker, you know. So it is a kind of a cool scene to be able to see. And the Eric and Alex were having kind of some fun after the game as well. And Alex jokingly said he was inspired. Well, maybe he was. I don't know. But sometimes it's hard to tell if Alex is joking or not. you know.
Yeah, he's pretty deadpan with all of his responses, isn't he?
Yes.
Apparently he's in center field today. How do we feel about that?
You know, I think that, okay, so if he's healthy, I think he's the Royals' best option in center field. Well, I mean, I guess you could Abraham Almonte, if he's productive at all with the bat, and depending if maybe it's a left-handed hitter, so you're sitting Gordon or Jay or something, or left-handed pitcher, I should say. But I just think people were asking during the first month of the season, you know, why did they sign John Jay and he's playing left field and Alex Gordon and all, you know, Gold Glove left fielders is playing center. And I think we've sort of seen our answer over the last week. John Jay just has some defensive limitations in center field with both the arm and the range. And I think he slots best in left. You know, I don't think Alex is a classic center fielder, but when they brought him back from the disabled list, they kind of wanted to ease him into it, which is why he was in left field. But I think if his body feels good, especially his legs, I think you'll see him in center field more often than not. And you'll see Jay in the corner. Now he's got the hip thing and they're monitoring that. So, we'll see, but that doesn't surprise me, especially if he seems to be feeling good.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the other big home run from last night. Jorge Soler hit a 3-run home run that essentially won the game, and this is just more good stuff from Soler. Good batting average, good on-base percentage. Now he's starting to hit for some power. Came through with a big clutch home run last night. I mean, this is the guy that the Royals were hoping they traded for when they sent Wade Davis to the Cubs. Now, again, small sample size, but got to be impressed with Soler across the board right now offensively, right?
Yes. I mean, the patience and the plate discipline for especially for Royals fans, I think, is the most encouraging and kind of rare thing. I mean, how often have the Royals had a guy who walks 100 times in the last few decades? And the answer is, well, zero, actually. Kevin Seitzer is the last Royal to walk 100 times in a season. I think that was in 1989. Maybe it was a few years later. Maybe it wasn't his rookie year. I might be mistaken. Anyway, regardless, Soler has that skill. He's able to discern balls from strikes. He takes a lot of pitches. It leads to a lot of strikeouts, but it also leads to a lot of walks. And not to throw out a plug or anything, but Rainey Gizzarelli, on A10 Often, wrote a piece for The Athletic earlier this week looking at Soler's start, and one of the things he looked at was, you know, are these numbers real? And he looked at pitches he was swinging at in the zone and pitches he was swinging outside of the zone, and yes, I think the numbers are real, though. The one catch has been that Soler just hasn't really been thrown a lot of strikes the first month of the season. I mean, pitchers have really challenged him with breaking balls outside of the strike zone and said, hey, we don't want to throw you fastballs, so here's a curveball, here's a slider, and yeah, we're not going to really throw you good pitches. And he, for the most part, didn't chase and he didn't swing. Now, I think the next question becomes, okay, now that pitchers are realizing that this guy is content to walk and we have to challenge him in the zone, can he do some damage? And he did last night. And I think that's another encouraging sign. And, you know, he has 3 home runs, but I do wonder, now that pitchers have kind of realized, okay, he's content to have a .430 on base percentage and walk, you know, 20 times a month, do we need to challenge him? And if that's the case, I wonder if the home runs, we'll see sort of him continue to get hot and even hit a few more home runs, even if the walks do come back to earth a little bit.
Russell, we got to work on your salesmanship here a little bit, pal.
I do have one thing I want to say at the end of this segment, but go ahead.
Okay. When you say not to throw out a plug or anything, just do it, man. Let's go. You're on with us. You rep The Athletic. We rep The Athletic for you. Just say, hey, my outstanding colleague, Rainey Gizzarelli, who comes on your outstanding radio station, did an outstanding piece about this and proved X, Y, Z. You don't have to apologize for it, man. Let's go. Let's promote this.
Threaten
thing.
Us. Say
we're good for it.
Read it or else.
Yeah.
Okay.
See? Very aggressive.
I want you to sell this thing, man. I don't want you to apologize for it. Come on, let's go.
What do you want to say right now while we're on the subject? Was it about The Athletic or?
Yeah, well, you know, I do. You know, and I love coming on your guys' show, and you guys have been great to me over the years. But oftentimes, people will still wonder, you know, why would I pay for online content, you know, on the internet? And, you know, the story I wrote about Alex Gordon and his brother last night, and it's on the website this morning, would be a perfect example. They're like, well, I would love to read this story, but why would you write something on the internet and offer it for free. And on a very semi-personal note, you know, like 8 or 10 of my former colleagues at the Kansas City Star were laid off yesterday, and not to by no fault of their own. But my larger point is that it's no secret that the journalism industry is in dire straits, and part of that reason is because newspapers decided about a generation ago that, hey, we need to give our content away for free online, and we'll survive by online advertising. And that has just proven to not be the case. I mean, the online advertising rates are very minimal. Newspapers don't make up the lost revenue from print advertising on online rates. The trend is even going worse in that direction recently. And this is why, you know, a place like The Athletic, at least the model and the idea of trying to survive in this climate is really important to me. So that would be my basic pitch, is that, you know, The Athletic is not smarter than everybody by saying, hey, you know, we need your money because we want to be rich. And, you know, it's very much of a survival tactic in this climate of journalism. And if people want, you know, baseball beat writers on the road, whether they're from the local newspaper or from The Athletic or from wherever, I would just say, whether it's The Star or The Athletic or any other publication that you find value in, like, please subscribe. You know, if you are really worried about the city council and the state house in Missouri and Kansas, and you want those covered, subscribe to The Star. You know, it's just like, it's a very simple formula that these places are only going to survive if people are subscribing and investing in them. And so when you know, a place like The Athletic has a very strict paywall for its sports coverage, there is it's just a pretty clear-cut reason. So that's just my spiel. Sorry, I had to get up on my high horse, Stephen.
No, I'm glad you did, because I'll and so you mentioned that, and I mean that sucks that there have been more layoffs, because so now I'm looking at my Facebook feed. I mean, one of my favorite writers for a long, long time at the Kansas City Star has been Timothy Finn. He's fantastic. And people that listen to the show know that I love sports, but I love music, you know, just as much. And that's my go-to guy to read about concerts that are coming to town, to read reviews of concerts. I'm always happy to see him whenever I go to concerts and chat with him if I can. And there's nobody's opinion that I respect more about music than Timothy Finn. And I saw that he posted that he's no longer going to be writing at the Star, and that sucks. He's fantastic, and so we're one of the best writers of anything at the Star, and he's not going to be there anymore. So there that that hits home for me, because I read him all the time. He's one of the best, one of my favorites, and a really good guy too. And so that sucks.
Hey, the Kansas City Star, because of investigative journalism, is causing some major changes to the way the Kansas State government is going about some of the things that they've done in the past when it comes to secrecy and transparency and things like that. If we don't have journalists covering those things, that never happens, you know. So it absolutely is vital. Obviously, those things are more important than even sports coverage. But I'll say this too, Rustin. I'm a subscriber to The Athletic now. It's $4 a month, which is a hell of a lot cheaper than a whole lot of other ways to get content. The Star used to cost me a lot more money than that. I would tell you, don't do it just because you want to make your contribution to save journalism. Do it for what you get in return. The articles the articles I'm reading from Rustin Dodd are worth the $4 a month to me. You were the one that had the story about the bus crash in Toronto, and I know now about a relief pitcher that took the wheel and might have saved the entire team from a terrible accident at the time, because you were there covering it. And nobody else had that story, by the way. And this story that you had about Alex Gordon yesterday, do it for selfish reasons. Do it if you love coverage of the team and you want stuff you're not going to get. It's worth $4 a month.
Yeah, exactly. I just, no matter what it is, I just feel like if you find value in it and you want it to exist, whether it's the local newspaper, whether it's the New York Times, whether it's some magazine that you like to read, whether it's The Athletic, just find a way to pay for it. And it, I think it's the only way for these sort of publications to exist.
All right, Rustin, before we let you go, Danny Duffy on the mound today to get the series win. It would be his first win. His ERA is in the fives. The Royals could use it. And let's be honest, Danny Duffy could use it. What about Duffy going for the series win today for the Royals?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a strange month because he said after his last start that he thought, and, you know, you can never maybe tell if this is just a little bit of confidence trying to boost himself up a little bit, but that his stuff in total in the month of April was sharper than really it was all of last season. Now, he had a couple of strange starts where things got away from him the first inning, but I thought his last start was a little bit of a step back for him just in terms of the full package. So he's got to get a win sometimes, and the Royals, strangely, have had a lot of success at Fenway Park recently, so maybe they'll get a series win today. They haven't had one yet, so maybe it's today, so we'll see.
Rustin, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Rustin Dodd in Boston covering the Royals for The Athletic. Noon first pitch as the Royals look to get a series win over one of the best teams in baseball, the Boston Red Sox, with Danny Duffy on the mound for the Royals, Drew Pomeranz on the mound for the Boston Red Sox. And Drake told us that Alex Gordon playing center field today for the Royals. I kind of like, you know what? He was kind of growing on me. I kind of like Gabriel Almonte a little bit.
He's, you know, he's serviceable. He's not, you know, he works. He's not Kerry Robinson out there climbing the wall on a ball that bounces 10 feet in front of him.
Are you serviceable?
It depends on what we're talking about.
Right.
What are we talking about here?
Whatever. Like, what are you serviceable in?
Long questions.
Right. Right.
Clearing my throat.
I don't mind Almonte.
I don't mind him.
Here is the lineup for today. Whit Merrifield's leading off.
Yep.
Jorge Soler power hitting second.
Yeah.
Moose. Hitting third.
That actually seems like a decent 1-2-3 right now.
Salvador Perez is hitting cleanup and is also your designated hitter.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's not a bad 1-2-3-4.
Got that going for him. Chesler Cuthbert hitting fifth.
Mm.
John Jay, sixth.
He's been all right. Gets on base.
Alcides Escobar hitting seventh. Alex Gordon hitting eighth.
Maybe hitting better.
Drew Butera hitting ninth.
Nope.
Well, you didn't even consider that, did you?
Well, the problem is, it's just that bottom half of the order, you know. Top half of the order is serviceable. You can win, you know.
Be more specific. What's the problem?
Well, what's Drew Butera hitting, about 176?
He's not here for his bet, but he's a catch and throw
right,
guy.
Right. There's a lot of catch and throw guys in the bottom half of that order. And now, Alcides Escobar, Alex Gordon, and Drew Butera are all not there for their bats. Right?
You don't have to be so negative about it. I don't think.
I'm just being honest. I'm not being negative. this team is.
What if I told
8
you
8-21, Stephen? I don't know if you saw that.
What if I told you that to confuse everyone in Boston, maybe to get them on their heels? Moose is playing first. Cuthbert's playing third. You got Gordon out there in center. Shakes things up. Salvia DH. Drew Bue behind the plate.
I like seeing Salvi DH. You know, let's rest him. Let's not overwork this guy, especially coming back from a knee injury.
How about Moose at first?
Okay. Sure, I like to see Cuthbert get some ABs. I want Cuthbert to hit a bunch this year. Let's find out what we got here.
Let's take a break, then back after this on WHB.